Now, are all the traitors present? Let's get started, shall we?
From rags to riches.
I'm so sick of this. Working like a dog and being treated worse.
Yorkshire to New York.
We're climbers, you and me.
A life dedicated to revenge.
Let's make this an occasion to remember.
A Woman of Substance on Channel 4. Stream now.
So what if the reason that you're feeling anxious, on edge, or emotionally shut down has nothing to do with your thoughts and everything to do with what your body remembers? Because trauma doesn't live in your mind, it lives in your nervous system. And until that gets addressed, you can't just think your way out of it. So today we're talking about PTSD, what it really is, how it shows up in everyday life, and how it can actually be treated at the level of the nervous system. Dr. Eugene Lipov, author of The God Shot and one of the world's leading experts in trauma treatment and the pioneer behind a groundbreaking approach that's helping people finally find relief after years of suffering, is here to talk about all things PTSD. So it's so good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So I'd love to get into it. Before we get into the science, I want to start a little bit with your story, because this isn't just professional for you. This is actually deeply personal. So you grew up in a home impacted by trauma. Can you share what that looked like and how it shaped this path that you're on?
Yeah. Well, thank you for asking that question. So basically, I was born in Ukraine. So my father was a flyer in World War II. So his job was to drop bombs on German ships, and ships didn't like to be blown up, so they would try to blow out the aircraft. So out of 10,000 people who were there in his squadron, 100 made it home. So he had pretty severe PTSD, and we'll talk about the name needs to be changed to PTSI, post-traumatic stress injury, but we'll talk about that. For now, we'll just use the term PTSD. Anyway, so he came back pretty severely mentally injured. And then he gave it to my mother. It's called secondary PTSD. When you come home, when somebody has PTSD and they come home and they transmit it to the family, that's called secondary PTSD. So he had that. And then, unfortunately, my mother took her life when I was a surgical resident.
Wow.
Because of PTSD. So that made me very interesting in psychiatric treatments which are effective in PTSD. Because the current therapeutics were very similar to what she was being treated with in 1984. And the efficacy of current therapeutics is about 40%, which is psychotherapy and pharmaceutical. So that's what I'm interested in. But I actually had no interest in working in PTSD until my mother's death. I was going to be a general surgeon and trauma surgeon. That was my path. And then I couldn't really complete that residency. It was very intense because my family was in shambles, you can imagine. So I switched to anesthesia. From anesthesia, I became a pain doctor. As a pain doctor, I became aware of an old procedure called stellate ganglion block that's been done since 1925. It seems to work on PTSD. My first publication came out 2008. Poof, we are talking today. So it's been 20 years since I treated my first patient for PTSD using this procedure.
Wow. I want to go back a little bit. You talk about secondary PTSD and that someone can bring that home to the family. Is it kind of like how you get a cold and you spread a cold? Is it the same type of concept?
Concept the same, but the agency is different. So if you have a cold, you actually have a virus that gets transmitted to someone else, right? So there is you can follow that path. There is no PTSD virus per se, but if you think about it, somebody comes home and you don't know what shape, typically it's a male, but not always male. A man comes back, they could be in a good mood or a bad mood. Occasionally, when people are in a bad mood, they have a tendency of tossing the spouses against the wall, or they may not do anything physical, but stress and screaming at people and feeling always on edge makes your fight or flight system overactive. Once it gets overactive, you can get PTSD from, let's say, battle or an attack, or you can do it drip by drip. Uh-huh. So very commonly when I treat, especially women, they say, I've never been attacked. I've never been in the military. How could I possibly have PTSD? How was your childhood? I was always scared because, you know, my dad was always this and that. And then I was bullied. and then I got married to somebody who is really not nice, that can also lead to PTSD. The brain doesn't know the difference. As long as it's you keep either severe, intense stress or trauma or continuous stress like bullying, that can lead to PTSD. And if you think about it, there have been a number of case reports of people being bullied and they commit suicide. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they're not fighting for their lives, but they feel highly uncomfortable. The brain doesn't know the difference.
Yeah, the body sure keeps the score. Can you just simply explain what PTSD is?
Yeah, sure. So when trauma happens, we're just going to simplify it. Let's talk about trauma. Two things happen. So let's say you step in front of the bus and the bus almost hits you and you step back. The first thing that happens, you start to hyperventilate, you look around so you don't get hit by the bus. You may have difficulty sleeping that night. Then everything comes down, assuming you didn't get hit by the bus. During that, what happens biologically is norepinephrine, which is the main transmitter for PTSD or stress, goes up. And then, but when everything comes down, goes down, everybody's happy. But let's say you're on a patrol and half your squad gets killed. That's a markedly different level of trauma or activation of fight and flight system. So two things happen. Norepinephrine goes up, so people can't sleep and they have similar symptoms. But number two, something called NGF, neural growth factor, neurotropin, is produced in the brain. Here, it gets transmitted to the neck, which is a stellate ganglion, which is a nexus between fight and flight nerves in the chest and the brain. Once it hits that ganglion, it produces new nerve fiber. So you're talking about, let's say, usually there are four sympathetic nerves in the brain, just an example. And then once this happens, NGF goes up, three nerves grow. So each one of those nerves produces more norepinephrine, so people have symptoms of PTSD. That's what persists. That can persist for 50, 60, 100 years. It can persist for a very long time. So that's the main problem. So when people takes away those extra nerves from 8 back down to 4. So that's kind of biological explanation. It's, you know, the great thing about what we do is all trauma to me is the same. If people have symptoms, like they can't sleep, they have hypervigilance, they're depressed, that's all we treat. It doesn't really matter. When people try to explain the trauma to me, I tell them it doesn't really matter. I do the same thing for everybody. Well, because the problem with PTSD is stigmatizing. So the person who came up with that term was Dr. Frank Ogbert, very famous psychiatrist. He came up with the term Stockholm Syndrome. So he believed, and still believes, he's 87 now, that PTSD term is stigmatizing. So if you think about disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, disorder is what's wrong with you. Injury is what happened to you. When people say PTSD is an invisible war, right? Probably heard that before. I was at a big fundraiser last year. Turns out people are still using the term. So it really makes me crazy when people use that. Because in the 1980s, there was an invisible wound. In 2026, we have advanced scanner. PET scanner, MR scanner, MAG scanners can actually see PTSD or PTSI on a scanner. So I just did a TEDx actually in Mexico 2 months ago, and then I showed the pictures. Like, you know, amygdala is what controls PTSD. It's an almond-shaped part of the brain. So I showed them pictures, like, you know, big blue blob, meaning amygdala is working a lot. If you can reduce it to a small blue blob, then you can see they're better. So the point is, the current reality is we know what it looks like. We know PTSD is real. We know it's biological. So when I talk about that, that's the difference. So I did a study and a survey, in 2023, that we asked 3,000 patients, if the name was changed, PTSD to PTSD, what would be the impact? One, people said there will be a significant improvement in hope. They will hope there will be actual solution because it's real.
Right.
They're going to go see somebody for treatment. Right. And then three, the stigma will get better. stigma kills, right? When people are stigmatized, they don't want to be called, oh my God, I have PTSD, I have a lifetime disorder. I don't want anything to do with that term. And that's the people that hide it and take their lives. And considering my mother, I'm very passionate about suicide prevention.
Yeah, it's such an important conversation. So why doesn't trauma essentially fade with time? Why does it stay with us?
Well, the people who it fades with time don't get to see somebody like me. People who don't, who doesn't fade, we're still here. So the reason is, I'm going to give you a real-world example of what it looks like. Two, remember I said that there grows a new nerve? As long as those extra nerves are there in the brain, it's not going to go anywhere. So I'll give you a real-world example. So we took care of this young man. He was 72 at the time. He was 18 when he was in Vietnam. So he got injured in Vietnam, severe PTSD for 50 years, 5 up. So he's been in a detox facility, he's been addicted, and his family really had a lot of issues with him because he was really not particularly a nice man. So we did the injection that I do, which works in about 15, 20 minutes. He felt significantly better about 30 minutes later. I was on, if you want to see it, it's on our YouTube. So he, 3 years later, he basically gave a speech at our not-for-profit that, you know, how much changed his life. And then the place where I almost started crying, actually, both of his sons came by and they goes, thank you very much for giving his father back. Again, the point is what we actually did, it's nothing magical about it. This is just pure science. It takes away the extra nerve. So instead of 8 that don't belong there, now you got up to 4 that's supposed to be there. That's why something that lasts for a long time can go away because you can actually address it.
So a lot of people think that PTSD, again, with the stigma, is that PTSD only applies to extreme situations. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, they're wrong. The bottom line is they're wrong. And if you look at, for example, suicide rate, let's follow that. So I treat children. I go as young as 8 years old. So if you look at the preteen suicide rate right now in the United States, you're talking about 9 to 12 years old. I believe it's the second most common cause for death, which is like mind-blowing to me. So the point is, were they in battle? Clearly not. Hopefully there is no sexual abuse, but I don't know. But the pointless, like, for example, bullying in schools, those kind of things, it's a slow drip. It doesn't have to be a big faucet getting you wet with trauma. It could be a slow drip, but if it's continuous and there's no safety, there's no rest, and combine that with digital devices, our smartphones, what that leads to is sleep dysfunction. You cannot sleep because you're watching a screen. So you go to sleep at 1 to 2, and then you get up at 7, and you're never quite right. Problem is that increases inflammation in the body. That affects the brain, and it leads to depression and suicidal thinking and all of that. So to give you a direct answer is you don't need a massive trauma. People always assume massive trauma. And actually, I can tell you where that came from. If you look at the definition of PTSD, DSM-3, which was a PTSD manual where it originally appeared, 1980. In order to qualify for PTSD, you need to have trauma outside normal human experience. My psychiatry colleagues were not doing anybody any favors by putting that as a diagnostic criteria. So my point is the doctors actually started the whole thing and people absorbed it, of course. Why would they?
Right. So what are some of the symptoms that come up when someone has post-traumatic stress injury? I'll coin your term.
Thank you. Now you're in a PTSI club.
Yeah.
Symptoms to watch out for is sleep dysfunction, a big one, right? Can't sleep. Or you have sleep, you may sleep for a long time, but you're not rested, meaning you wake up and you feel groggy, you feel not sleep. Also nightmares. So sleep is a big part. Impulsivity, meaning somebody touch you in the shoulder, you feel like you want to whack them side the head. Hypervigilance, you're looking around. make sure there's nothing bad's going to happen to you. Feeling of doom. Also, comorbidities are something associated with PTSD, such as depression. Probably 80-85% of people's PTSD have depression. It's really probably not a surprise. If you have PTSD, you're going to be pretty depressed. 85% of men, or up to 85% of men, have sexual dysfunction, which is a huge number. Sexual dysfunction leads to marital dysfunction and lack of satisfaction, and this is a cycle. So those are kind of the basic symptoms. There are other ones, but people with PTSD, pretty much, I think, if you think of the symptom I just gave you, those fit about 90% of the symptoms.
Yeah, sleep is so important. If your body is not resting, it's not repairing. And that day after day after day can sure wreak havoc on the system and amplify those symptoms of anxiety and hypervigilance for sure.
Well, let me tell you more about sleep. There are a couple of things to think about that people don't think about. Sleep dysfunction, I just actually wrote a summary paper on that. Sleep dysfunction leads to inflammation. Inflammation leads to heart attacks, dementia, cancers, and all that kind of stuff. So that's a problem. Two, there is something called lymphatic system, with a G, lymphatic system. So the brain burns glucose as a fuel, right? Biological computer. But there are byproducts. Those byproducts stay in the brain. The only time they get out of the brain is when you are in deep stage of sleep. So if somebody has PTSD, they have something called fractured sleep or whatever. So they sleep stage one, stage two, which is light sleep. They never get into deep sleep. So all those byproducts are still sitting in the brain. It makes you depressed, groggy. The whole thing makes it worse.
Right. Absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit about the cell phone use. You and I were discussing it before we started recording. And so you coined a new term, dumb phone. So can you talk a little bit about what the cell phone is doing to our brains and how it's actually related to PTSD, or it is PTSD essentially?
If I may correct you, I'm sorry to do that. I did not coin the term dumb phone. That's a probably 15, 20 year old term. Dumb phone definition, as opposed to a smartphone, meaning it doesn't have the apps, especially social media, things like
that. Right.
Yeah, in fact, I just wrote a book about that, which we're finalizing editing. So take a look at this beautiful book. So memes, brain disorders, and other modern maladies. So smartphone has a lot of applications, and I think it has a lot of really cool things you can do with it. Like you can order food, you can do all type of things. But the problem is,
Exactly.
You can play games, you can get audiobook, you can get all type of. That's kind of the white side of the phone. Dark side of the phone is that, especially when you're a Gen Z or younger or Alpha generation, you are hooked. You're completely hooked into this. You're addicted. In fact, there was a successful suit against Meta and YouTube last week that the algorithms, or what's presented to you on a continuous basis, is designed to get you hooked in. TikTok, actually, of all of the apps out there, TikTok is by far the most addictive. Very fast on, dopamine, and it poops you out, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so let's assume you get addicted, which is a large percentage of our Gen Z generation, not as much as millennials. So Gen Z and Alpha are addicted. So here's what they're doing now, which just shows how human beings are amazing as a whole. Mm-hmm. But they know it's bad for them. You can get them hooked, but then they respond to it. So 10 to 15%, maybe even 20%, of Gen Zs are trying to use a switch to a dumb phone, which is a flip phone that doesn't have any apps, or they're doing something called bricking. Bricking, basically, the device becomes a brick, not effective. So you can completely disconnect it. You can put it somewhere, put it away, so you can't even get to it. That's the best thing. But most people are not going to do that. So, but our devices, for example, called brick, you put it on the phone. What it does, it deactivates the screen, makes it black and white. You can still use a few functions, such as you can use it like a phone. That's a crazy idea. You can use it like a text machine, and you can do a banking app, and you can do a parking app, and that's it, nothing else. It breaks this addiction cycle. So the problem with phones, smartphones, if you use it a lot, which is we're talking about 5-10 hours a day on top of everything else, is when you do that, it gives you what I started to call the term digital PTSD. Meaning, if you watch enough stuff, if you watch somebody being shot in the face 20, 100 times, the brain remembers that. And the way to get people stuck in to the phone, you want to have like, oh my God, novelty, something explosive, something this. Basically, whoa, look at all those amazing things going on. The problem is the brain doesn't know the difference. Are you in battle or are you fake battle on the phone? In many ways, phones are worse because if you think about it, not only does it happen continuously, right, it's a continuous drip, but two, people under the covers keep watching the phone. That affects their sleep. Sleep affects inflammation. Inflammation affects the brain. It increases PTSD like symptoms and depression. And off we go. So the term I've coined, which I haven't really used much yet, this first time on the air, digital PTSD. So I'm actually writing a paper how PTSD and digital PTSD is the same in many ways. There is a common denominator, which is inflammation.
Interesting. Well, thank you for correcting me. And it reminds me of a time when I was doing a study on therapy animals in the jail. And I would have to go to the local penitentiary. And when I did that, I couldn't have my cell phone on me. And so they asked me to leave it in my car. And for some reason, it was the most freeing experience. Even though I was doing work within a jail, I felt so free because I didn't have my cell phone and I couldn't have it with me. And so I'll never forget that day. I just felt like there was this load off my shoulders. You know, it's kind of like if your cell phone is sitting on your desk, it's like it's forever speaking to you, even if it's not doing anything. It's like baiting you the whole time.
Let me tell you another interesting part of me. Is there is another term that was published in 2018. It's called teleference. Have you ever heard that?
No.
I'm sorry, technoference. Technology interference. This was coined specifically for mothers of small children. Okay. You got a lot of it. There was a study that maybe forced phone. So if a child, like you're talking about 1-year-old, when the mother looks at the child looks at the mother, everybody's happy. That's normal, right? If a mother looks away from the child, they get very unhappy. They get very anxious because then there is no care. Right? So with cell phones, that's pretty common, right? You go, oh, okay, this. So you're looking away from the child. The child is getting anxious. So what we're finding is mothers of small children are getting depressed because the oxytocin that binds them is being ruptured and the children are being anxious. Cell phones have in fact, even at that stage, we're talking about very little children. We're talking about 1 to 2 years old. So we can have a generation of very anxious children just from that. Of course, mothers trying to do the same thing. They're trying to put it away or by breaking apps and things like that to make fall into a brick.
Right. So a lot of people try to, you know, do mindset work in order to feel better. Why can that work fall short if the nervous system is still dysregulated?
So, well, let me give you a real world example, if I may, and then you'll kind of get a feel for that. So we took care of, you know, I am a chief medical officer for an international company called Stella Mental Health. So we have office in Australia. So one of the people we treated was a young man, about 45 years old, who was a policeman. His job was picking up dead bodies in tunnels, which is a horrible job, of course. Anyway, yeah. He was anxious, severe PTSD. He got divorced from his wife. He was depressed. He was suicidal, all of that. His psychiatrist was also his psychotherapist. He had 5 years of every intervention known to mankind. Nothing happened. He was still on the verge of suicide. So he had the Stella ganglion block, which is the stuff I do or what I came up with. 2 weeks later, he was a changed man. He was markedly better. He was able to communicate with a psychologist. He was able to sleep, and he was no longer suicidal. That kind of goes to your question. Why could not they break that cycle of horror? Him is because, again, you cannot snap out of PTSD if you have extra nerves. Those nerves are pumping out norepinephrine. You're going to be anxious. It doesn't matter what kind of work you do, what kind of breathing work you do, what kind of psychotherapy you do. If it works, great. But if it doesn't work, that's why it happens, because you're stuck. Your nervous system, not only is it stuck, there's literally extra nerves which are making you miserable. And that means until those extra nerves go away, it's not going anywhere.
So you pioneered the use of this. Is it stellate ganglion block for PTSD? Yay, I did it. So how did you discover that? How did that discovery happen?
Yeah, so it was pretty interesting. So I had, again, no interest in psychiatry. In fact, I was very much anti-psychiatry then, because of my mother saw her psychiatrist day before she took her life, which is a horrible day. Anyway, so I was taking care of patients. I'm a pain physician. So I've been doing, first time I did stellate ganglion block or SGB toolkit, it was 1987. So I had a patient that had severe neck pain, which I took care of, but then she also had hot flashes. And then I don't do hot flashes. So I'm not a gynecologist or a primary care doctor. I sent her to my brother, who's a very smart primary care doctor, not primary care, but internal medicine. He takes care of all type of patients. Anyway, so he tried the usual therapeutics and nothing worked with this patient. So he sent her back to me. And he said, you know, use the stellate ganglion block for hand sweating. Why don't you do the injection for the whole body sweats, hot flashes? I go, that's not going to work. He said, how do you know? I said, I don't know, but okay. Anyway, I did the procedure and took it away. Worked great. Then we did 10 more people, and they did great, and I published on that. And then Chicago Tribune came by to do an article, and you'll kind of get a feel where the problem started. So I knew I was in trouble. This is Chicago Tribune, our biggest paper in Chicago. Basically said, Bianca Kennedy, this beautiful breast cancer survivor, let Dr. Lipov plunge a three-inch needle to her neck, which is not three-inch needle, but whatever. That's how they said it. And bottom line is it worked, but you don't know how it works. So it's complete garbage. So then they went to Northwestern. When I met the med school, they go, oh, my God, this is terrible. Then I went to Rush when I did my fellowship, and they go, this is terrible. So I was quite annoyed, to put it very politely.
Yeah.
So about 3,000 articles, anything and everything, trying to understand why it worked for hot flashes. In the process of understanding why it worked for hot flashes, I came across a paper from Finland, a Finnish paper. They were doing T2 clipping, which is fight and flight nerves in the chest. They would put a clip on it using like pretty big surgical tools to take away hand sweats, and they found PTSD went away. So I read that. I was like, what is that? So it turns out the nerves from the chest connect to the stellate in the nexus, and that goes to the brain. So I called up my brother, and I said, hey, send me a patient who has PTSD. He had one. He was sending him for psychiatric admission because he was abused during a robbery 2 months before. We did the procedure. He didn't have to be admitted. I published my paper. Here we're talking today.
Wow. So what is actually happening to the body during this procedure?
Right. So if you remember, PTSD, and I'm going to keep using a term for simplicity, PTSD, extra nerves have grown, right, in the brain. Remember, instead of 4, now you got 8. So when I put local anesthetic, the same thing as going to a dentist, which is numbing up the nerves in the neck. So when we do that, two things happen. One, norepinephrine, brother of adrenaline, drops like a stone. So 5-10 minutes later, people feel so much better. They can breathe. They feel relaxed. But second things happen. The NGF, nerve growth factor, that is used to maintain those extra nerves, when we talk to NGF, goes away. And now the nerves, so when the NGF goes up, that's called sprouting, right? Extra nerve growth, like that, like leaves. But when you put local anesthetic on the ganglion, it leads to pruning, cutting off the leaves. So the extra nerves are going down the cord now. And I wrote a paper explaining all that in 2009. After that, people stopped giving me grief about that. I didn't know why.
Okay. So what kind of results are you seeing with this protocol?
Well, what we're seeing is 80 to 85% success rate. And the great thing about what we do is it's rapid, right? I'm not a patient individual. So if you look at most psychiatric intervention, it takes months or years. Like, got a 2% improvement this year. That's nothing. We're talking about a significant improvement in sleep. We're talking about significant improvement in mood. We're talking about significant reduction in feeling of doom. Like, we're talking about day or two. We're not talking about a month. And then for the best results, people follow up as good trauma-informed psychotherapy, and the results have been amazing, including children. That's what's cool about it. I mean, what are you going to do with an 8-year-old? You're not going to be able to talk him off the ledge. He's not going to sit, or she's not going to sit for psychotherapy.
Yeah, absolutely. So this sounds absolutely life-changing. So why isn't this widely known yet? What are you doing to make it more accessible for more people?
That's a number of different questions in there. First of all, let's talk about, if you don't mind, the name of the book, because that kind of goes with what we just said. It's called The Gut Shot, because there was a Marine that I treated. His body was treated with stellate ganglion block. And the Marine said he had the gut shot. I said, what is that? He said, well, it changes lives. That's why only God can change lives. That's why I love the term. That's why its book is called that. What have I been doing to make it accessible is the question. So I'm a chief medical officer for Stella Mental Health. So we have 24 sites in the United States. We have a site in Israel. We have 4 sites in Australia. We're doing podcasts such as this. There's also a big study being done. An amazing couple gave us enough money for us to do a real big study in NYU, which is a huge university. They've been doing it for 3 years. Hopefully it'll be out shortly. And I think once that comes out, that's like a real study. We did the brain scans before. We did the brain scans later. So one little study was done like that in Long Beach, California, but nobody took it seriously because the number is so small.
Yeah. Well, I think just like anything in life, it's timing, right? And now is the time. Now's the time to get it out there. And more people are talking about mental health these days. And it's becoming less of a taboo to have a conversation about our mental health.
No, I agree. Because the other thing is, I think people are sick and tired of bad results. I mean, you know, you're looking at success rates of 40% current therapeutics. It's Dr. Hogue, H-O-G-E, published a paper on that in 2011. He said current therapeutics will only be effective 40% of the time. Because people don't want to wait, and it's not very effective, and it's painful. The stuff I do, I mean, it's like having a tooth injection, big deal. But my point is, emotionally, it's not painful. When people come in to see me, they want to tell me about the trauma. I tell them, I don't want to hear about your trauma because it's traumatizing you further. Why are you doing that? No need. Let me just fix you. I don't care. If somebody has a broken leg, do you care if it was because they jumped out of the building or they got hit by a hammer? You just need to fix the leg. I just want to fix the brain. That's all I'm trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's powerful to not have to dig into those stories. That's why psychotherapy takes so long, because it's essentially working through that. But when you bring that back up, it's like you're living it again. And that's really difficult for people. And most people don't want to face that again. And so it's terrifying. Oh.
It can actually make it worse. It can make PTSD worse.
I could see that for sure. So tell us more about the God Shot.
The book or the injection?
The book.
It was written beautifully by Lauren Anpieldi. She is an amazing writer. If you look at the bottom there. So basically, you know, what the book, the reason we wanted to write the book is I wanted to write kind of the first chapter talks about my trauma and how I got into it. But ultimately, it's a book of hope, meaning it's possible to get better. Nobody kills themselves if there is hope. So I'm very big into hope. So there are specific things to do. This book also summarizes, it shows various real world examples. Like, for example, primary and secondary PTSD, or, you know, the spouses getting it from their primary PTSD person. Just the mere concept that it's possible to do, I think, opens people's eyes. I also think psychedelics, the good ones and the bad ones. So what I've tried to do, you know, I've been in this field, as I said, for 20 years now. So I have a very different perspective on psychiatry and psychology, which hopefully is refreshing. It's certainly science-based. There are references in it. It's really a science-y book. It's not a science book. So Lauren has an amazing ability to get the stories out of you, which did a great job, but also take relatively sophisticated science and make it understandable. So it's actionable. It's actionable, and I think it's a great fast read. It's not very long. It's not 500 pages. I think it's 250 pages. And I think it's life-saving. The predecessor of this book saved a bunch of people from suicides. I'm hoping this will do a lot more. It's also, I think, a better written book. Frankly, I knew a lot more when I wrote this book as opposed to my previous one.
Amazing. And we'll have that linked in the show notes for everyone so they can have access to that. I just think the work that you're doing is so amazing and so needed right now. It must be so gratifying to be doing what you're doing. For someone who's listening right now who feels like they want more information or they're going through something really, really, they're struggling with something like PTSD.
Well, there are a couple of things I would suggest. Number one, if you want to be evaluated to be treated, if you go to stellamentalhealth.com, you can find a provider near you. Know there is help out there. You can talk to our providers or psychiatric nurse practitioners. They will evaluate you if you're the right person, all of that. So that's one. Two, if you're interested in the sciencey part of it, because some people go, well, that's a pretty big claims you're making out there, buckle. If you go to my website, dreugenelipov.com, everything I've published, actual publications are there. This will just give you a lot more information. The other part that maybe my new website is dumbisismarter.com. If you go on that, it talks about, I have my TV appearances talking about smartphones, memes, the negative effects. You can look at the new book coming up there. But the point is, you need to protect your brain. You only have one of those things. And, you know, just a very broad summary I would give to people is put away the phones. Definitely no phones in the bedroom for any reason, right? You shouldn't have that at all, in my opinion. So no screen time at all, no screens or whatsoever, 2 hours before you go to sleep. Children or adults, whatever, just set a specific time. You can have your phone full function for, let's say, an hour a day. The news, every moment, you don't need to know what's the latest and the greatest and everything, because they're going to try to suck you in. That is their function, suck you in, but you don't have to get sucked in. You have control of that. Also, get out in nature. Nature is very healing for mental health disorders. Exercise. When somebody is depressed, the muscles get weak. Weak muscles produce inflammation. They produce more depression. So it's a cycle. So exercise. Also, I would not use energy drinks. There's a whole section in my book about that. Because if you're revved up all the time, you don't sleep. You don't sleep, it's bad. And if you're revved up all the time, it also causes PTSD by itself. So all of that is complex. You know, people know what to do. They need to eat non-processed food, all the boring stuff nobody wants to talk about. Get a good night's sleep. If you can afford it, get an Oura ring or some kind of biomonitor like this. It'll tell you how deep you're sleeping, how long you're sleeping, what's your heart rate doing. If your heart rate is running fast, what are you doing? Something's wrong.
Yeah, it comes down to those foundational things, right? It's the eating and resting and exercise. Unfortunately, most people these days want that quick fix. And I know your God shot sounds like this quick fix, and that's beautiful. But when it comes down to it, if you're not doing the foundational things, you can get treatment and you can feel better. But if you're not eating well and exercising, you need to still put in the effort.
Except one of the things to think about, the injection, if you're depressed and you can't sleep, you don't have the energy to even start. So this is why it's called gut shot, right? Because if you can get out of it, that's why after the procedure, when you feel stronger, you get some sleep. Stellate worked beautifully for sleep. This is the time to take advantage of it. Be prepared to change your life. If you don't want to get better, then don't bother. If you do want to get better, this gives you a kick in the ass so you can move out of the space where you shouldn't be, but then take advantage of that. Point is, start exercising, go in nature, put the phone away, I mean, as much as you can, but definitely get some sleep. If you don't get sleep, you're going to be miserable. And it cuts down your lifespan.
Absolutely. So before we go today, what gives you the most hope right now in the future of trauma treatment?
Well, the good news is people are waking up that there are other options exist. So it's called interventional psychiatry. Interventional psychiatry has a lot of problems. It's not pills, right? We're looking at things that work rapidly. Stellate is one of them. It's not the only thing out there. Ketamine, intravenous ketamine, I think is the best. So you can do intranasal ketamine. That's been shown to be very effective for depression. Not as great for PTSD, but it works well for depression. It's also called something TMS, which is transmagnetic stimulation, which is electrical wave change the mind. It takes some time, but again, it's no pills. So people can get out of it. And I think that in many ways is the future. And I think people are waking up. Just the other thing that I'm so excited that Gen Zs and some of the alphas are starting to realize phones are bad for them. And uh-huh. I'll tell you how I got to the whole thing completely. I wasn't interested in phones. I don't have an addictive problem. Nor do I do all the apps. And I'm not interested. I'm too old for that. So my son, who's been an avid user of his phone, like everybody his generation, he's 22 years old. About a year ago, came back and said, I'm tired. It makes me tired. I'm pooey. How about if, let's start building Legos? I was like, what? So that was his way to put away the phone. You have to pay attention. I mean, it's like we're talking about big ships, right? Big ships, like Star Wars ships, stuff like that, 3,000-4,000 pieces. So he wants to get away from the digital screen because he knows it's not good for him. I don't have to tell him that. Telling children anything is useless operation. I was like when I was a pain guy, when I tell people you should get better, until they're ready to go, they're not ready to do anything.
Yeah.
But I think the whole thing, the Gen Zs are very interested in dumb phones and they're interested in breaking the phones. They really are starting to pay attention to the mental health, which I think is great. That gives me a lot of hope for the next generation.
Amazing. Thank you so much for this powerful conversation and for all the amazing work that you're doing and for being here today.
Thank you so much.
So if you've ever felt like something is wrong with you, like you should be able to move on, but you can't, this conversation is here to remind you that you're not broken. Your body is responding exactly the way it was designed to. It just hasn't been shown how to come out of that state yet. So Dr. Eugene is leading the way in changing how we understand and treat trauma. And we've linked all of his information in the show notes so you can learn more about his work. If this episode resonated with you, please send it to someone who has been carrying something that they've never been able to explain. And we'll see you on the next episode. Take care, everyone.
One more thing. So I'm trying to change the name PTSD to PTSI. But there's 3,000 people that I did a survey on was not enough. So I'm trying to do 100,000. The reason I did a TEDx was talk about the name change. If people go to itspksi.com, I would like them to fill out the form survey because if I can get enough people, I can actually change the name.
Amazing. So we'll make sure to link that in the show notes as well. Thank you again for today. It was such an amazing conversation.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.